Chapter 11. Imitus 7. Moon. Check 9. Unverified location. The Psyker seized, bringing a haze of ferric red from the industrial clamps that held her pallet upright against the stone wall. Her scalp was stapled with adapter plugs, dark cabling flexing and bowing as she struggled. Foam flecked her lips. Her eyes were wide and staring, though what it was that held her mind's attention, Zerberin could not hazard. In the mat of hoops and cabling above her, a lumen filament blinked on and off inside a cracked blue bulb. The witch's fits were already becoming less frenzied, with every abortive jerk against her restraints increasingly synchronized to that grubby flash of blue.
"The soul is empty. It is dry. The green roar is heard across the stars. Drink deep of it. Drink deep."
"It is gibberish," said Zerberin, a ghost-white giant encased in ceramite of unpainted grey.
"The message doesn't yet make sense to her,"
whispered the tonsured Librarius serf beside him.
"Her mind is interpreting the psychic impulse as best as it is able."
"So far,"
she screamed, blood trickling from one nostril.
"Why are you so far from home?"
More serfs in the plain grey habits of the Fist's exemplar Librarius hurried around her, making adjustments to flow regulators in her cranial plugs, tightening straps, or receiving instruction from the clicking instruments to which she was connected by peripheral and lumbar plugs. An overseer in baroque gunmetal grey robes and bronze trim, a bondsman of sorts, offered sharp words of direction, but was largely content to let the serfs perform the labour. Various parts of his exposed flesh had been dug out and replaced with smooth iron grafts, presumably to excise the early stigmata of mutation. A brand of ownership, like a coal-black tattoo, was cut cleanly in half by one such metal plate on the side of his face. The woman and her handler were the property of Warsmith Calcator.
"Are you even one of us, brother?"
The cage rattled with the violence of her efforts. The words made Zerberin's neck itch, and the Iron Warrior's bondsman growled instructions to his Fist's exemplar counterparts. Zerberin looked up to where the cable bundle fed into a hole in the ceiling. White daylight fell through.
"Join me,"
the Psyker whispered, sinking into her restraints and turning her head sharply from side to side.
"A red star. A world of fours."
The overseer took her glistening wet hand, leant through the cage, and listened as she whispered something in his ear.
"We are the last wall. The last wall. The last wall."
It went on. Zerberin swore. "Find me when she begins to talk sense." Zerberin enclosed the Librarius serf's shoulder in a gauntleted hand. He towered over the mortal. The barest effort on his part would have broken ribs, torn muscle, crushed a lung, and not a shred of guilt would have haunted him at having done so. The serf swallowed. "Tell only me."
"Only you, Lord, of course."
The corridor from what they laughingly now called the Astropathicum was a worn-out stretch of ferrocrete blocks with freeze-thaw cracks in the mortar. Stacked building materials littered the floor, runes painted next to gashes in the wall or partial collapses of the ceiling with colours that indicated priority. Doorways without doors led to side chambers where serfs of the two chapters, legions, Zerberin had ceased to worry over how he and his allies described one another, conducted basic repairs. In others, surplus equipment from Gilliman, Excelsior, Paragon, Courageous, Implicit, and from Palimedes had been stockpiled. Paired quartermaster serfs, one from each affiliation, took inventory, assessing how their meagre resources might be most efficiently shared. From one, the scent of counterseptic hit Zerberin well before his dully echoing footsteps carried him to the threshold. A dozen muscular youths from the local slave stock were laid on gurneys, stripped down, unconscious. One had been opened up, blood splattering his surgical robes in a perfect line from his throat to his sternum. Apothecary Rayok said nothing as Zerberin walked past his door, giving him only the sullen flash of binoptics above an expressionless metal grill. A short set of steps curved downwards 45 degrees to the left. Zurbarin could not help but admire the design's innate defensibility, based on the premise that 90% of mortal human assailants would prefer to wield a close combat weapon in their right hand. It led to an archway large enough to accommodate a Terminator. The ferrocrete was sanded smooth. Zurbarin walked through it, and a sweeping turret opened out before him, large enough to land a Stormbird or to sight heavy artillery. Its 2-meter-high ramparts followed 3/4 of the circumference of a circle until each end cut into the sides of a mountain into which the Iron Warriors had built their old fortress. Sentinel servitors with low oxygen enhancements looked out over the feeble atmosphere. Thousands of effluvium stacks broke the thin layer to belch toxic waste gases directly into the void. Behind the swaddling layer, the storm-racked bulk of the gas giant Immitis 7 seethed like a judgmental eye. From the echoes of hammering, drilling, and welding, Zurbarin knew that Forge Brother Clathrin and his Iron Warrior's counterpart would be conducting the serious work of shoring up the outer perimeter, retrofitting the backup void bank hacked out of implicit systems into the old fort's age-withered grids. The older men of the manufactory slaves, the women, the younger boys, trimmed wires, sawed timber, shaped stone. The occasional whimper or cracked lash echoed up through the layered fortifications. Zurbarin found the forced labour distasteful, but it was hardly the worst thing he had done in the name of necessity since becoming de facto lord of the Fist's Exemplar. They had been slaves of the Iron Warriors long before his arrival, so what harm had he brought them? None. He squinted in the dim but unaccustomed daylight as Epistolary Honorius and Calcator's apothecary Barban approached him. Honorius was wearing Terminator plate without a helmet, his pale face like a pearl in a hard, dark shell of constrictor rings and armoured cabling. The epistolary was paler even than Zurbarin, which was in itself disconcerting. Zurbarin's skin was without pigment, as he was the child of a world whose sun could kill, but Honorius was more ancient than he, and his recruitment predated the settlement of Idolica by 5 centuries. His eyes, by contrast, were as black as the void beyond the Astronomicon. He was a pressure on the psyche, a force against Zurbarin's mind. Flickers of what could otherwise only be sensed steamed from the immensity of his armor plate like the corona of an eclipse. Zurbarin aside, no one had worked more closely alongside their new allies than the epistolary.
"What news?" said Honorius. The subtle power woven through the old warrior's deep voice never failed to give Zurbarin pause.
"Nothing yet, but it is the last wall."
"Then the fight continues."
"Good." "Of course it continues. Do you think that brothers of ours would surrender?"
"Do you intend to rejoin them?" said Barban.
The apothecary's gunmetal and bronze battle plate was extensively modified and appended with bionics. A pair of bulky, muscular youths, perhaps 11 or 12 standard years of age, hovered behind him. They looked sickly from blood loss and enforced genhancement. There had been no time to assess the men for worth or for biological compatibility. As much as they needed strong walls, they needed strong warriors to hold them. Zurbarin examined the 2 neophytes. Their throats and chests were scarred from the implantation procedure. Both were already showing bruise-like discolorations to their skin, the first dermal deposits that would, over time, develop into the black carapace that would enable them to wear power armor. Zurbarin could not tell just from looking whether they were Iron Warriors or Fist's Exemplar. Presumably, Rayok knew. Zurbarin drilled the Iron Warrior with his gaze. Neither spoke.
"My lord!"
came the relieved gasp of the Librarius adjutant, stumbling down the steps and onto the sunlit rampart. He offered the epistolary a low bow and turned breathlessly to Zurbarin with his report.
"The communication is from Euclideus, lord."
"The chapter master of the Soul Drinkers," said Honorius, one eyebrow lifted, peeling the infinite black lens a little wider. "Our absent brothers join the war. Perhaps all is not yet lost."
"What does it say?" said Zurbarin.
"A call for aid. They are beset, lord, by orcs in great number."
"How far?"
"The next system, Corwood."
"Reachable," said Honorius.
"Just," Zurbarin corrected. Barban was watching them both without expression, as though assessing their decision.
Tell no one of this, he said, turning to the mortal serf. You are to ignore all further attempts at communication from this source. But, Lord, Honorius began before falling silent. On some deep human level, it troubled Zerberin that one so ancient and powerful could be silenced by a glance from him. We are not ready yet, brother, he said, listening to the sounds of forced labor that continued far below his feet. When we are strong again, then we will make our presence known.